This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Defense remains a bit of an issue at times for the Texas Longhorns, but the good news for Texas and its fans is the ridiculous part of the schedule is now behind them. And do you know that Oprah meme on the internet that got really popular about how she gives out everything and, you know, you get a car and you get this and you get that, like what she gives her audience all these gifts? Well, Major League Baseball has just decided it's going to hand out contract extensions to everybody. Welcome back to another edition of the Extra Bases Podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas from orangebloods.com. We are up to episode 34, and we got a lot to talk about in this episode because a lot's happened, both with the Longhorns. They had five games last week, five games against top 25 teams, every single one of those games. And also, you know, something I've talked about on this podcast before is just how the Major League Baseball market is changing in the way, you know, teams view free agency, the traditional free agency sense from guys who are available to go out and sign immediately, and also to how they value young talent and controllable talent and, you know, the service time issues in baseball and all of these things. So we are seeing a shift in how Major League Baseball does business. It's something that I alluded to the last couple of months. I thought that this is where baseball was heading, and it's heading there now with all these contract extensions. So we'll get into that as well. But I wanted to start with the Longhorns because obviously this is an Austin-centric, UT baseball-themed kind of podcast. And Texas played a double midweek game against Arkansas at home and then went on the road for three games at TCU. We'll start with where Texas is in the polls this week. It did drop that series at TCU after splitting the midweek games against Arkansas, but Texas only fell to number 13 in D1Baseball.com's top 25 and down to number 7 at Baseball America. I still think 7 is too ambitious with this Texas group, but I think if you made a case based purely on their resume in terms of the quality of wins they've played and the schedule they've played, I think you can make a case that they have the number 7 resume in the country, but I just don't think this is a top 10 team when you look at the eye test right now. But top 15, I think you can make that case. I think certainly you can make that case for a top 20, especially when you look at who they've beaten this year and who they've played over their schedule. So we'll get into the TCU series first. It's got to be a really, really frustrating one for David Pierce and the Texas team because they gave that series away in a lot of ways. Frankly, they should have swept TCU. They really outplayed them throughout the weekend besides late game situations in both Friday and Sunday. The Friday game, Bryce Elder takes a shutout into the ninth inning. Texas is up 2-0 in that ninth inning. He hits the leadoff batter and then is immediately pulled. I'm fine with Pierce sticking with him. His pitch count was okay. TCU was at the bottom part of the order. The thinking probably is you let Elder see if he can get a quick out or keep this thing going, and then you've got Fields ready, and you can just bring him in with the 2-run lead. And really, you know, when Texas lost that game 3-2, it wasn't, you know, the leadoff hit by a pinch that hurt Texas from Elder. That wasn't even the tying run. It was what happened behind that. So he hits the leadoff batter. Texas brings in Cam Fields, who hadn't given up an earned run this year in an appearance besides that Stanford monsoon game when he had to literally pitch during just like a tropical storm of rain on the field. So he had been really, really good this season. Batters were only hitting .051 against him heading into that TCU game. Well, he struggled to throw strikes. Michael McCann struggled to catch his slider, which led to two balls getting to the backstop at one point. I mean, Fields has to be better with his control and command, yes, but those are plays that McCann's got to make. He knows the slider's coming. He knows when a right-handed guy like Fields misses, it's going to be low and away. So it was just a collection of things on the mound behind the plate. And then, you know, Eric Kennedy getting a weird read on the ball on the final play of the game. He had to run a long way, but it was a shallow fly ball that should have been caught. So Texas ended up seeing a 2-0 lead quickly disappear, and TCU was able to win 3-2. And, you know, I knew Texas would respond in Saturday's game, and they did. I mean, they just absolutely pounded TCU 13-1. It was a complete effort. Blair Hinley was really, really good again. He had one shaky first inning, but besides that, he was really solid again. And that's kind of been an underrated aspect, I think, about this season for Texas, is that since the Louisiana start and the Purdue start to begin the year for him, he's been really good outside of one inning against LSU, where LSU's top of the order got to him. And then other than that, he was good against the Tigers. So think about this. He's stacking starts now against quality teams. That's LSU, that's at Stanford, that's Texas Tech, and that's at TCU. That's four top 25 teams he's now faced consecutively. And I would say that two of those lineups are for sure really, really good and probably the two best lineups he's going to see this year. I think Stanford's lineup is solid. I think TCU's lineup is probably more average to above average. But that's four top 25 teams he's faced consecutively now, and he's really, really throwing the ball well. So you knew that Texas and David Pierce were going to respond in that Saturday game, and they did. And in Sunday's game, they were in control of the game. Coy Cobb didn't quite give them what they needed on the mound, which has kind of been his story of his freshman season so far. He just can't quite get deep into outings. But Texas led this game 7-2. Eventually, TCU came storming back. Texas grabbed an insurance run to make it 8-5. And they go into the eighth inning up 8-5. And then just all hell breaks loose. And it's, again, it's a defense. It's the middle infield defense. It's some inexperience at first base. Some occasional catching issues. Strike throwing issues. Left field issues. I mean, as great as Kennedy's hitting the baseball, which he's doing a terrific job. He's up to 320. He was a Big 12 player of the week. He's up to 320 in batting average. He's got more walks than strikeouts this year as a freshman. That's something that you don't really see often from a freshman, is their ability to walk more than strikeout. But his defense continues to be an adventure in left field, and it's just every bad thing that could happen to Texas self-inflicted-wise in that eighth inning pretty much did. And TCU capitalized on it. Give them credit. They put the ball in play. They forced Texas to make plays. They capitalized when Texas pitchers couldn't throw strikes. And they scored five runs in the eighth inning to win that game 12-8. And this was definitely a missed opportunity for Texas because, again, they should have won the series, absolutely. You can make the case that they should have swept TCU, which, I mean, just winning the series alone would have put them in the driver's seat to win the Big 12, because if you think TCU and Texas Tech are the two best teams in the league besides Texas, well, Texas had already played those two teams, and if they would have had series wins over both, especially one on the road, they would have been the favorite to win the Big 12. Now they're at 3-3, which is not an awful start at all, considering who they've played. They dropped a road series, but they didn't get swept. They took care of business at home against Texas Tech. So definitely there's nothing to panic about as it relates to the Big 12 title chaser or anything like that. But this was a missed opportunity for Texas. And this shows that they haven't consistently played their best baseball yet. It shows that when they do play well in all three phases, they're capable of beating anybody in the country and capable of being a very good team. I think we saw that Saturday against TCU, just like we saw it throughout the weekend against Texas Tech. So I think that's a reason for optimism with this group, is that while the TCU series is maddening for Texas fans and David Pierce and his staff and his players, because they know they let one slip away, on the other side of it, they know also, too, that they're capable of playing much better. They've shown that at times. They know where they need to get better. They got to throw more strikes on the mound. They got to play better defense. I thought that their offense took a step forward this weekend. TCU is a really good pitching staff. And even in that Friday game when Texas only scored two runs, they put some really good swings on Nick Lodolo, who was throwing the ball about as well as anybody in the country heading into that start. So the offense, I think, is going to come along. And I thought that David Pierce made a really good point about this when we talked to him last week before their TCU series, is, when you see guys struggling at the plate or a pitcher struggling with something mechanically or this or that, you got to understand, too, that these college guys right now, they don't have a lot of time. There's only so much practice time these coaches have with players. There's only so much free time that the players have, with school ongoing, of course, spring break was happening recently, but during the normal school grind, it's a tough situation for those guys to be able to find a bunch of extra times to get in the batting cage and find a coach and work on some things and things like that. So As hectic as this schedule has been, it really hasn't allowed Texas to have much practice time. I mean, they have to have one day off a week. And when you're playing five games in a week, it doesn't really leave much practice time for swing adjustments and things like that. So I think that once you see the schedule normalized, which Texas is going to get back to the traditional schedule of a midweek game and then a three-game series on the weekend, I think as you see that normalized, I think you'll start to see Texas's skill level and consistency improve because there's going to be more practice time. The guys are going to be more fresh and things like that. So, but really, it just, you know, I don't think the outlook of Texas dramatically changed after TCU. It reinforced what we know about the team, that is defense and the young pitchers have got to throw strikes. If they do those two things, they're capable of beating anybody. But those are the two things that at times can be inconsistent and at times can give them issues. So I don't think there's any reason at all for Texas fans to panic coming out of the TCU series, but you just got to understand it was a missed opportunity. And Texas is capable of playing much more consistently and much better than that. So again, you're listening to the Extra Bases Podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas from orangebloods.com. We are up to episode 34. And I went in reverse order from last week's schedule on purpose because I think that the two midweek games against Arkansas had an effect on what Texas did against TCU. And it wasn't specifically about pitcher usage. Now, Arkansas fans, by the way, are I don't know the perfect word because it's like a collection of obsessive, annoying, ridiculous. Some of their fans that at Dishwalk Field were just downright rude. Weird's not the word. It's a fan base that is very in your face, very over the top. And just, I'm sure they have quite a home atmosphere at Arkansas because they're super into it. So they're filling my mentions on Twitter after Friday's game because Fields blew the game at the end. Oh, you shouldn't have thrown Cole Quintanilla three innings on Wednesday and yada, yada, yada. Cam Fields had been statistically a better pitcher than Cole Quintanilla was heading into that Friday game against TCU. So I don't think the double midweek thing from a pitcher usage standpoint really affected what happened to Texas on Friday. But I do think if you play five games in a week and you get to Sunday, it might be tough. It might be tough to find some arms on Sunday when you've got guys that, especially the way those Arkansas games played out. It was more about how those Arkansas games played out because Arkansas's offense is really, really good. And both those games turned ugly. Texas had no business winning that Wednesday game that they found a way to win because Arkansas walked so many guys. I forget. They walked 14 guys, I think. It was one of the longest, most annoying, like, sucked the enjoyment out of the experience games that I've ever covered in college baseball. Just so many pitching changes, so many walks, so many stoppages of play. Oh, it was bad. Texas found a way to win that game. But because of the way that game played out and then also with Arkansas hammering Texas the game before, Texas was forced to use a lot of pitchers. And they didn't have Ty Madden available this week because he's been resting shoulder. David Pierce said that he was scheduled to play catch on Thursday. We haven't gotten a report yet about his prognosis following that. So when you get to a Sunday in a three-game series after you've already played four games that week, it can be a little tough in terms of the freshness of arms. I don't care how many arms you have. So I think that double midweek played into it that way, not specifically with the pitcher usage way on Friday. And David Pierce said after the Wednesday Arkansas game, you know, I joked with them about the double midweeks. I mean, are you ready to bury these things? And he said, we're done. So I wouldn't expect Texas to play double midweek games any more in the future under David Pierce. And it puts too much stress on your pitching staff and on your team. You don't get that practice time during that week. So on one hand, it's great for the schedule. It's good for Texas from RPI standpoint to split that and get a win over a top RPI team, a team that I believe is a top 10 team in pretty much all the polls right now. But I think the double week schedule is probably done. So Texas will be back in action Tuesday against Incarnate Ward. And then this weekend they host Xavier. So I went back and looked at the Texas schedule up to this point so far. They're 17-10, which I think if I would have told Texas fans at the beginning of March, hey, you're going to get out of before the LSU series, you're going to get through LSU, Stanford, TCU, Texas Tech, the two Arkansas midweek games. You're going to be 17-10 at the end of this. I think a lot of people would have taken that and been happy with it, or at least content, knowing that there's some big wins in there, and there's at least a couple of series wins in there as well. So of the 27 games Texas has played this season, 15 came against teams that are currently in the D1 baseball top 25. 15. That's over half the amount of games that Texas has played this year. And think, too, that, you know, they opened the year at Louisiana on the road. That team's not ranked, but, you know, that's a solid baseball team. So 15 games against ranked opponents already out of the 27 games that Texas has played so far this season. And if you look down the road, based on the rankings right now, Texas only has four games against teams ranked inside the D1 baseball top 25. The A&M midweek game, and then the three-game series against Oklahoma, which is at Texas. All those games are at Texas. So you go from 15 games out of 27 games against ranked opponents to just four games down the stretch of the season. The schedule really opens up right now, and it really allows Texas to control its own destiny, I think. To go out and make some noise in the Big 12, to build on its resume and have a strong overall record. It's all there for the taking for Texas. And that's not to say they're not going to play some good teams the rest of the season. Oklahoma is one of those top 25 teams. Obviously, I mentioned Texas A&M. I think Oklahoma State's always the solid club. Baylor has been hit with a lot of injuries, but I think you can make a case that they could push their way back into the top 25 at some point. West Virginia's Friday night guys is a probably going to be a first-round pick. So they're going to play some good teams, but they're not going to play the grind that they just endured with, you know, LSU, then Stanford, then Texas Tech, then TCU. I mean, it was just relentless. There was no break. So really the schedule does set up nicely for Texas down the stretch to flex its muscle some and kind of control its season and potentially play its way into, you know, another Big 12 championship or another regional host or something like that. I think this team has proven it's capable of beating anybody. And I think that as they get more out of their roster and they get more practice time and things like that, I think you'll see the consistency of Texas increase, which could create a lot of wins against this schedule the way it finishes. So I mentioned we're going to talk some about the Major League Baseball extension stuff. Episode 34, Extra Bases Podcast, yak.com. I'm Dustin McComas from orangebloods.com. Just went through what's up with the Longhorns on the diamond this week. And I wanted to get into this Major League Baseball extension stuff because I've talked about it a lot. I've seen how free agency this offseason has unfolded. And I read a lot about baseball and over the years have, you know, networked some through my associate and part-time scouting and all those things to kind of get more of a inside peek at how Major League Baseball operates from a front office and scouting perspective. So I really wasn't ever surprised that when these old players hit free agency, these old players that if you go look at, you know, some things like WAR and, you know, their pitching numbers and their hitting numbers and their value numbers or whatever, just, you know, weren't really great players. And, you know, we're asking for multi-year contracts and millions of dollars and those things. I'm just thinking to myself, look, teams are getting smarter now. It's something I mention a lot that, you know, teams all want to be smart by spending as less money as possible. And they understand now that they can go find a replacement player, whether it's a young up-and-coming player, whether it's, you know, somebody in their minor league system, whatever. They can find a player like that that's capable of replacing the production that a, you know, an Adam Jones would give you. Although Adam Jones eventually did get signed by the Diamondbacks, you know, he was, in terms of value and things like that, one of the worst outfielders in baseball last year. And, you know, teams are going to be like, well, I can get that production way cheaper from somebody else. I don't have to sign him to a free agent deal. And I'm just using Adam Jones as an example. I think he's you know, he's a great leader. He's got an amazing reputation in baseball. I think he's going to definitely add something to Arizona. But if you're just looking purely from a statistical analysis standpoint, and these are what a lot of these teams do now, is they have their computers, they have their their methods for spitting out values and money and all of these things. And a lot of them are really married to that. You know, they really trust how they analyze players and the aging curve and performance and all of these things and where they can get production from. So this led to this free agency offseason that was really inactive because you have so many teams that are doing this now. It's really taken hold of most of baseball. I mean, there's been players that have reportedly, you know, mentioned that they sometimes received like 5 and 6 offers in free agency at literally the exact same time because it's like these teams are using these fine-tuned systems of how to, you know, evaluate players and value, and they're compiling data and just on this similar schedule, and it just kind of spits out what this player should be worth based on his production in the meantime, what his production will be in the future. And a lot of teams are doing this now. So it's led to this, to free agency, as we used to know it, kind of come to a screeching halt where these big deals or even, you know, multi-year million-dollar deals in general just aren't being handed out at the rate they were. You know, Dallas Keuchel is still a free agent. Craig Kimbrell is still a free agent. Why? You know, because they're asking for more years and money than a lot of these models are saying they're worth. And teams are just not willing to make that sort of, you know, commitment to paying that kind of money over that long of a deal for those types of players. And it's not an owner money thing. In the last podcast, I talked at length about how, you know, fans need to stop treating owners like they're poor. You know, and they signed Mike Trout and they're not going to be able to sign anybody else. Like, is that more valuable than winning? Like, look, like Arnie Moreno's got a ton of money. Mike Trout's only going to take up like 15 to 18% of their luxury tax base. They can build a winner and spend a lot of money around Mike Trout. And they're not, these owners aren't poor. They're billionaires. They bought these franchises because they were great investments. And trust me, they're making more money now than any time before. So it's not an owner money thing. It's just when it comes to building a roster to win games, a lot of these front office people now, they side with, you know, finding the cheap replacement as opposed to going out and spending the free agent dollars. So, well, that would tell you, okay, how can players combat this? Because the service time issue is you know, it's something I've talked a lot about including in a couple of recent podcasts. The service time issue needs to be fixed because you're going to have teams, just look at the Toronto Blue Jays this year with Vladimir Guerrero Jr., although even though he's hurt, or you could say Bo Bichette, Nick Senzel with the Reds. You've got these teams that are still, and even the Reds were very aggressive this offseason and clearly going for it. You've got these teams that are still sending down some of their top players for the first couple months of the season just to have another year of control with these players. And it's delaying free agency for a lot of these players to the point to where they're hitting the market at an age that's kind of viewed as the end of their prime or is starting to get into some sort of decline. Or maybe they just don't end up what they were capable of as players, and that free agent window kind of closes on them. You know, they're not able to maximize their dollars. So what that would tell you is, well, okay, if you're a player, you've got to figure out the best way to start maximizing your dollars now. And I think that we're starting to really see that in a big way. I mentioned all the extensions being handed out. It's like Oprah handing out gifts to the crowd. You get one, and you get one, and you get one, and you get one. Well, it's like the floodgates opened recently. Eloy Jimenez with the White Sox, Blake Snell with the Rays, Alex Bregman with the Astros, Chris Sale with the Red Sox, Justin Verlander with the Astros. And all of those deals are kind of different, too. Different players, different ages, different history, different ages, all those sorts of things. But what they all have in common is these are teams that understand what kind of player they have. They know that they feel really, really good that this player is going to provide this type of production, and they want that player around. They also know that they want to try to prevent free agency as long as they realistically can. You know, with guys having their arbitration years and then the free agent years and things like that. So these teams want to control these players for as long as they can, as cheaply as possible. And it makes sense. You know, it's just smart baseball business. You've got a really, really good player that's really, really cheap. Well, that's a good thing. It means you can have more money to to use elsewhere, and you're kind of maximizing your value for roster space. So I think the agents, teams, and players are starting to better understand that it benefits all of us if we can start coming to these middle grounds and start paying these guys more money, but at the same time, the team not relinquishing all of its future control, you know, still keeping these guys in the organization for a while, but just paying them to keep them happy, to keep them there, and to kind of prolong free agency a little bit. So I'll start with the Eloy Jimenez deal because we've never seen anything like it. It crushed the Scott Kingery deal with the Phillies for a guy that was extended before he even, you know, played in a major league game. Eloy Jimenez has not played a major league game, and the White Sox just signed him to a 6-year, $43 million extension with two club options that could total $35 million more. And basically, here was the thinking. Eloy Jimenez is ready. He's been ready. He's ready to show up in Chicago and hit 290 and hit bombs and be one of the best hitters in baseball, I think. And Chicago is going to send him down to AAA. Why? So they could prolong free agency one more year. Well, Eloy's camp and the White Sox, you know, were probably like, okay, let's figure out how to do this to where we can get him on the field. Now you guys can pay him a little bit. So they basically are paying him more money, will bypass the arbitration process, and at the same time, the club options are hefty money as well for Jimenez and the 6-year deal with the two-year club options. And all Jimenez has given up is 1 year free agency. That's what he's given up. So the White Sox are like, okay, we can keep you in our organization for this long, you know, and you're going to give up just 1 year of free agency to get to the roster now, to start playing now, to not be in AAA now. So, you know, immediately once that deal was signed, the White Sox basically said, hey, Eloy Jimenez is going to be on our roster because there's no incentive anymore for them to keep him in the minor leagues. I think that we're going to start seeing more deals like that. Although there aren't many Eloy Jimenezes that come around a long time. It's just something the Braves should have done last year with Ronald Acuna Jr. And they got lucky that it didn't cost them a playoff berth when they held, you know, arguably the best player on their team that's not named Freddie Freeman. Hell, maybe he is better than Freddie Freeman already. They held that guy down in the minor leagues to begin the year, even though he was clearly ready. He showed up and was immediately an impact player. That's the type of deal the Braves could have struck last year. That's the type of deal the Blue Jays can try to strike with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette. And I think you're going to see more of these deals happen as teams are still able to pay these guys less money than they would receive on the open market and less money than the value they're probably going to generate on their outfield production. But they are able to actually pay them some money, keep them happy, keep them in the organization, and maybe buy out a free agent year or two. You know, Blake Snell extension, 5 years, $50 million. Covers all his arbitration years in one free agency year, just kind of like the Jimenez deal as well. So basically, Snell's like, look, I want to take some money now. I'll trade a year of free agency if you guys start paying me millions of dollars now. He was going to make like $573,000 this year. For Blake Snell, coming off the season he had last year, yeah, I mean, I think that Snell was okay taking some millions right now, even if it meant giving up a free agent year. So, you know, his deal is kind of similar to Jimenez in that way. The Alex Bregman extension, 5 years, $100 million, that covers his three arbitration years. It also covers two free agent years. And I actually think that the Astros got a steal on this. The Eloy and Snell deals will probably end up being steals as well, but especially the Bregman deal, because he's not going to hit free agency now until I think he's 30 years old, which I think these young guys now and these agents, they need to understand that the earlier you can hit free agency, the better. If that means maybe sacrificing something early on, if you can hit free agency as 26 and 27 years old, that's a payday, because then those teams can give you those, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10-year deals because they're not paying you until you're 40 or 39 or even 38 years old. So the Bregman deal to me was kind of interesting. It's obviously good money, I think it'll prove to be a bargain as it relates to financially. I mean, this was a guy that was, you know, in borderline MVP type of good. I mean, he didn't have the season that Mike Trout and Mookie Betts had, and, you know, maybe even Jose Ramirez as well, but he was really, really good. I mean, on most years, that kind of season is going to put you in contention to win the MVP, and it kind of did last season. So getting that guy locked up for 5 years, $100 million, I think is a value for the Astros. I just was a little curious if Bregman and his agent gave up two free agent years. But you know what? As much of a sure thing as I think Alex Bregman is, I think that he's one of the more safe, sure thing players in baseball. You know what you're going to get with Alex Bregman. It's no guarantee that, you know, if he would have delayed this, that same type of money would have been there. Maybe an injury happens or something like that. So these are all things you have to weigh. It's tough to stare down that kind of money and say, oh, I'm going to wait to hit the open market. So the Astros get him locked up for 5 years, $100 million. The Chris Sale deal, kind of just your traditional extension, being proactive before the guy hits free agency. 5 years, $145 million. The most important things for the Red Sox, I think, are that this actually lowers the team's, you know, the average annual value of his contract as it relates to the luxury tax, which is important for a team like Boston that tries to stay under that even though they spend a ton of money. So that's lowered with the way this deal was structured. And also, too, I think 5 years is a really fair commitment both ways. It's a lengthy commitment from the Red Sox to a pitcher that's about to turn 30 years old. But it's also a fair commitment to a pitcher that is one of the best pitchers in baseball. It has the track record, although people question his durability. He's never had a durability issue before, and that's very fair money as well. So clearly, Sale wanted to stay in Boston. He made that clear. He was about to become a free agent. Boston was able to be proactive and lock him up. They're only paying him through, I think he'll be 35 when this deal ends. So not a huge long-term commitment to a pitcher that's going to pay him, you know, when he's 37, 38 years old or something like that. So I think that's a good deal both ways. And another good deal both ways is the Verlander deal. Astros extended him for 2 years, $66 million. I'm a big fan of these short-term, high average annual value deals, especially with a guy like Verlander's age. As amazing as he is at you know, just the longevity and production and the way he really takes care of his body, if you haven't read it before, there's some really good pieces of reporting out there about how he just really worked as hard as he could to kind of rediscover how to keep his body in just like the best shape and the best flexibility and all those things. It's really cool how he discovered, you know, some small things you wouldn't think of that were just kind of throwing him off and causing him to have lower velocity and those things. So 2 years, $66 million, a lot of money for a guy that's been awesome on the mound. Obviously, he's getting up there in age. This is not a long, long commitment from the Astros, but it is a commitment to keep him in the mix in the meantime. So I think that this is just the beginning of these types of extensions that we're going to see across baseball. Really wouldn't surprise me at all if we see a lot more of these types of deals this year, because as more people see how free agency is playing out in the offseason, and as more people begin to become frustrated with the service time manipulation and all these things, I think you're going to see more teams try to be smart and proactive and try to get these players to come to a middle ground as to say, hey, we really value you. We know you're really, really good. We want to pay you more money than the system would allow you to receive right now, but we still want to not trade in all of this advantage that we have in keeping you in our mix long term. So I think you're going to see, especially these deals like Aloy, Snell, and Bregman, I think that those are going to start becoming more of the norm, as long as the service time issue is set up the way it is right now, to where, you know, you can prolong free agency so much. And in these cases, these guys are not hitting free agency until they're 30, 31 years old, just because of the service time manipulation and things like that. So not going to say I told you so, but I did kind of forecast that this sort of thing was coming, this sort of shift in baseball economics as more people understand, hey, free agency might not be the cash day it once was. Let's try to get the money we can get now. And then that way, when we hit free agency, we've given our guys millions of dollars, and at least they've received some of what they would normally receive if they were on the open market. Like if Blake Snell hit the open market tomorrow, he's getting way more than 5 years, $50 million. Heck, he might get, you know, 10 years, $300 million or $320 million or something like that. Eloy Jimenez would get way more than 6 years, $43 million. He'd probably get something like 6 years, $150 million or something like that. And, you know, Bregman would get more than what he got. But these guys are getting millions and millions more than they would have received if they just would have just grinded it out through this system. And then there's just kind of been this, you know, this probably leaves the door open for these guys long term to stick with these organizations, because these organizations at least tried to take care of them a little bit. And at the same time, didn't relinquish all of their team control built in by this system. So I think that this is a definite sign of things to come in Major League Baseball. And with that, we will wrap up episode 34 of the Extra Bases Podcast on theact.com. I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com. I hope I did not get too nerdy with all this baseball economics discussion, but I really think it's truly fascinating. I think baseball is really undergoing a shift right in front of our eyes in terms of the way they evaluate players, the way they spend money, the way free agency is viewed, the way, you know, service time manipulation, and all these things. I think there's a big shift going on right now, and I think it's really interesting to watch. And the Longhorns, always interesting to watch, especially when they compete the way they do. They let one slip away at TCU this weekend, but again, I don't think there's any reason to panic, and the schedule is about to get much, much easier down the stretch. So the Longhorns, you can say, survived their just total grind, brutal grind of a schedule. They survived. Not only did they survive, they're 3-3 in the Big 12, they're 17-10 overall, and they're a number 13 team in the country. So probably a little better than surviving when you consider all those games they played against really, really good teams of late. So with that, let's wrap this bad boy up. It is Monday here in Austin, Texas. I hope that all of you have a great week. I hope that if you're making your final fantasy baseball drafts, I hope those are going really well for you. I just completed an 18-team draft, a 12-team NFBC online RotoWire championship draft, which was really intense, but I'm pretty pleased with that team. And then I've got my final auction league draft coming up this week. So best of luck to all of you out there that are participating in fantasy baseball right now. Do your research and don't be afraid to be aggressive on pitchers late. Hit one or two of those breakout pitchers, and it could really, really change the value of your season long term. So thank you for listening. Get to theact.com/Austin. Check out all of our great podcast content. Until next time, watch some baseball. MLB opening day is almost here. I'm excited. I hope you are as well. I hope you've enjoyed this latest installment of the Extra Bases, and take care.